Welcome to Education Perspectives. I am your host, Liza Holland. This is a podcast that explores the role of education in our society from a variety of lenses. Education needs to evolve to meet the needs of today and the future. Solving such huge issues requires understanding. Join me as we begin to explore the many perspectives of education. So today we are really excited to welcome Kathy Tice to the show. In asking for her bio, she says, from mentoring students in high school, working in after-school programs in college, to elementary education teacher turned school counselor, education has always been the answer to the question of what do you want to be when you grow up? Fayette County Public Schools has been my career home for the past 15 years and have been able to call myself a Lexingtonian since my undergrad years at UK. Outside of the workplace, Kathy enjoys time with her family, celebrating her nephew who is graduating this month, exploring new things in town with close friends, and getting in many walks or hikes with her pup, Marco. Welcome, Kathy, to the program.
Thank you so much. It was so great to see you again.
Same here. We actually had some opportunity to do some really interesting work together years ago. So yeah. It's wonderful to kind of reconnect like this.
Yeah, so very nice to see your name pop up in an email and see that you're doing some pretty awesome work too. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic. So thank you again for thinking of me for this opportunity. It means a lot.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I think that your perspective on education here is really interesting. And so I'm really glad to have you involved in the program here. And we've got some cool topics to discuss today.
Awesome. I'm ready.
So I always kick off with every person to be interviewed. If you look at education from a 30,000 foot view, why do you think we even do it as a society? Why do we invest in education?
You know, I go back to my upbringing and my learning of just myself as a human. Like, I think education really created a lot of my values of what I wanted to see for myself, you know, learning and growing and changing and adapting. And I just think education allows a lot of those situations to naturally happen. And then there's education that's almost formulated in a very comforting and safe setting and a trusting setting that, you know, if I needed support, I knew I had an adult to go to. If my family needed support on how to support me at home, there was a community of people that were willing to help guide us on a very proper and more, I guess, directional path to lead us into a very positive outcome. I just feel like, you know, there are structures in place that help develop humans to be successful. And I feel like a lot of things, and I think that's pretty much why I went into education, was because I wanted to be a part of someone's learning path. And I think that that is pretty valuable. And I like watching myself grow into who I am today, but also watching students grow into, you know, over the years of watching them grow. And now that I'm in this position that I am now, I can actually see kids from K through five, where when I was in the classroom setting, I only got to see them for that 1 year. And I was lucky if I saw them later, right? Now getting to see it from this vantage point, it's like, man, like what we're doing is phenomenal. Like watching kids from kindergarten to fifth grade. And then we have kids coming back in middle school to help volunteer or high school to help volunteer. And just, I've got an email from a kindergarten student that I taught, you know, 7, 8 years ago now. And it's phenomenal to think like, wow, like there was obviously something that we do for a reason to make a connection piece, but also to show kids that, hey, there's going to be some tough times in life, but hey, if I could get through them, you can too. So I feel like it's just more of a support system than anything else. And I think it's kind of a beautiful idea to have that more structured in place, because if we didn't have the structures in place to help that, then, you know, I wouldn't have had the guidance to get to where I am today myself.
Wonderful answer. Yeah. I appreciate that. And you kind of touched on the next question about what drew you to education in the first place.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to add there?
I will. And I'll be completely frank with you on this, because this is my personality to a T. I had a very negative experience with one issue, or I don't know, just situation that happened when I was in a younger grade. I never felt like a confident reader. I was always very a slow, methodical reader. My comprehension was not maybe of best of par, but I was getting there and I was learning strategies to maintain that. But there was a moment where I felt really inadequate. And I'm telling you, like, this was like second, third grade, to feel inadequate, taking an AR quiz. And a teacher in the building made me feel like I was not capable of being a good reader. And that to me, I mean, I would never say that name, but like, that's how much this has impacted me. I'm, you know, 38 years old, and this teacher's name comes to my mind, like it's, you know, plain as day. But it definitely put a thing in my brain for the longest time that I am not capable of being a good reader. So when you hear people having, you know, major reading difficulties and being so negative about that and not having the understanding of how to dig yourself out of that, I became the student that was just, I'm going to do what I'm asked to do. And I'm going to keep in the background so no one can know that I'm not feeling good about this or that I don't feel like I'm, you know, making gains on this. So I always went into the thought that I don't want anyone else to feel like that ever because it's not fun, right?
That's heartbreaking.
It is. And, you know, and God love my parents, you know, they did the best they could with what they needed. They didn't know that I was feeling that because, you know, second, third grade, I probably didn't even know how to verbalize that. But there was definitely something that kind of held me back from feeling like a good reader for the longest time. I mean, I tell kids to this day, I did not really truly learn the pleasure of reading until I got to college. And that's, you know, and that's wild to think. And so I told everybody, you know, I'm not mad if you're a slow reader. I said, I'm still a slow reader. I'm a very methodical reader. There are times when I have to reread that page 25 times to still get what I am trying to gain from that concept. But I just said, I need to change that outcome for kids. And I want to change outcome for parents too. So they understand that just because a kid is not maybe making adequate growth on one test, which is one snapshot of that child's life, doesn't mean that they're not going to be okay and functional and progress in where they are. You know, like to this day, I'm still a very slow reader, but have I done things in my world to make me successful? Yes. Like I have adaptions. I have, you know, skills that have helped me get through that. And, you know, So that's pretty much the reason why I went into it was knowing I don't want anyone to feel the way I did.
Isn't that great and very inspirational as well, because you could have taken that the exact opposite way and not wanted to have anything to do with school.
Right.
So that is neat. And to have a teacher or counselor that can understand that maybe you're coming from a different spot. That's why it's so important to meet these kids where they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So now that you're in it, what do you love about what you do?
You know, I will say, the one thing I really, and I'll kind of go from both perspectives, right? Because I had to learn how to adapt into my role as a counselor. Because as a teacher, I loved the structure. I loved the routine. I loved watching day in, day out. I loved watching kids on Monday with what we did in reading or math or whatever lesson I was doing. And I loved watching them grow. Or if I was like, oh, that did not go well yesterday, let me retweak it. And it was like, it was just finding that best fit puzzle piece. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to change this to make sure that this kid gets it this time. Because it was fascinating to watch how kids learn and how I had to adapt my teaching to make sure I met everybody's needs. And that was what was so cool about in the classroom setting, right? Like I had the day in, day out. I knew exactly where my kids were every day. Loved the structure, loved all the routine things. Again, thrived on that environment, myself personally too. And then I get to the counseling role. It is nothing like that. And so I had to adapt to know that, hey, you might have this schedule on your calendar because you are trying to make sure that you get to this kid, this guidance lesson, you know, whatever you have at a 504 meeting, all the things, right? And then all of a sudden you walk in the building that day and you're like, I know exactly what I'm going to do. It's going to be amazing. And then kaboom, right? Like you just have to be ready to go and kind of, you know, do some triage. If something lands in your lap, it's okay, because that's where my focus should be right now, because that's where the need is. And so I really had to learn how to adapt to that, but it's also allowed me grow in that area, understanding that, hey, this is real life. And that actually teaches kids that it's okay, that if it doesn't go the way that you expected it to be, we can adapt and we have strategies that we can follow through with and be okay as well. So we don't have to let our shoulders always go like this, because that's where I go, like, my day is going wrong. But it's like, okay, take a deep breath. It's okay. So it's almost been more valuable for me to show kids like, hey, I've had to learn how to adapt too. We can do this together. So it's, again, no 2 days are alike in the current role that I'm in. And I think that that's what keeps me on my feet. And, you know, I get to see all the kids now. You know, it's not just a one setting classroom, where I loved the intimacy of a one setting classroom as a teacher. That was awesome. But now it's like, I get to see all the kids. So that's even more exciting too. So both in all good things on both sides of it, but just definitely, I like just the day in, day out, just to see what is going to pop up in my office and then just kind of go from there.
Well, you know, the thing that I see in that counselor role too, it's an important component of teaching kids resilience.
Absolutely.
Things can go sideways and we can still make it work. And, you know, and it's okay sometimes to fail and, you know, get yourself up and dust yourself off. And
exactly.
Especially kids. And today, I think kids have a lot more to face than maybe when you or I were going up through school. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you.
So we had talked a little bit earlier about early intervention. Tell us what you think listeners should know about that importance and maybe some of the challenges you faced in making that happen for your kids.
Yeah. So I think, you know, a big thing is in kind of perspective wise, you know, I worked at a Title I school as a classroom teacher where we had a lot of, you know, funding coming towards our way. We had some programming come our way. I mean, when I taught kindergarten for my last 2 years in the classroom, we were connected to the university and we had this 6-week program prior to school that was for all incoming kindergarten students. And we partnered with UK. It was beautiful. And they did a lot of prep work. It was a half day program. The kids knew, you know, what the building looked like. They got some literacy skills, you know, in place. I mean, kids who came in at the beginning of that probably didn't know many letters. And then at the end of just a 6-week program before school even started, they were ready to go. And so I'm telling you, like 12 of my first year kindergarten teachers that I was teaching with did that program, and watching them in the actual classroom setting, their confidence level, number one, was massive. Like they came in, they're like, oh, this is my school. I know, you know, these are my friends. This is the classroom. So my other 12 kids, and I shouldn't even say 12 because that year I had 29 kids when I first started in kindergarten. That year was wild. It was great though. It all worked out. But they came in and the 12 students I had that summer helped the rest of the classroom blossom very quickly and adapt really well. So like my classroom community was amazing because we had already invested in little leaders in that classroom and it just bloomed with the other group of kids. It was just amazing. So like those kids already came in with skills on literacy, friendship skills, you know, social emotional learning kind of lessons, some phonics things too. It was just, it was really neat. And I will say that group of students really grew throughout that school year. It was awesome. I will say now that program kind of went away. That was a 2-year thing. I think it was just a scholarship thing, which is fine. I get it. Like funding is hard. But then I look at now being at a school that does not receive Title I services and does not have the same concerns or needs as I should say, like a ratio level wise. But I will say there are still interventions that could be supported on this level as well. And this is just fresh on my brain because we've had this conversation with several of our staff members. You know, February is the big time of year where we're getting our staffing and our budget and we're trying to determine things for next school year. And one of our biggest things is, you know, we want to have full-time intervention positions for our students because we do have kids from K-5 that require whether it's reading or math interventions. And sometimes I hate to say, but like we're trying to find the funding to do that and to still house appropriate grades or like class sizes in classrooms. So we're not overdoing it. And because again, you can't really intervene on a bigger classroom set, you know, setting sometimes. So this is the biggest thing is, you know, elementary budgets are not automatically given certain staffings, right? So I'm already on the staffing because the district puts counseling as a non-negotiable. You have to have a counselor, you have to have a principal, those kinds of things. But we get to make the decision of, do we get to put in intervention? And if we don't have the funding or we don't finagle things or move things around, we don't get that. And so my thing in this, speaking with several colleagues is, you know, you look at the high school budget or the middle, I think it's more high school, you know, they get an automatic interventionist, which may, again, it's a high school, it's a very large population of students. But if we could get that position or two positions or, you know, based on ratio of students that would receive some intervention at every school level for elementary, if we could do all this early intervention stuff, we wouldn't necessarily need it later on. So why are we not investing in those positions as a blanket on our budget and staffing for elementary schools now? So we don't have to stress about finagling to find the money for it or making higher class sizes so we can get an intervention teacher and move things around. Why can't we just have that be our baseline expectation that all elementary schools get intervention support that we don't have to come up with? It's already on the workbook. And then we don't have to stress about how are we going to make this happen for our kids?
Well, that comes back to that age old, we need to fully fund education.
Yes.
Discussion.
And let's go to it too. Let's fully fund preschool while we're at it. I mean, let's look at that 6 weeks of a program, right? Of the pre-kindergarten work. was phenomenal, right? And that was just 6 weeks. Could you imagine if we fully funded preschool, like what our kids would come in already knowing and being supported by in our program? We would actually like be able to break down more barriers for some of these families. Cause I will tell you, I think some families still don't even go out to resource and find access, like with the first steps or early steps, right? Like they don't even know that that's even an option. So why don't we start doing that more with our preschool groupings too?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Yeah. And if we can fix or give that extra support at such a young level, it's going to have all kinds of impacts further on down the line, like you say. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I know that it was interesting for me to learn as a parent that you only teach kids how to read and through grade three. And then it is reading for comprehension. And so if you don't get in that little window of mm-hmm. having good, solid reading skills, mm-hmm. that really puts kids at a deficit for the rest of their school careers.
Well, and even think about, this goes back to social emotional well-being, right? So if I'm a fourth or fifth grader and I'm being pulled for phonics skills, I am so socially aware that I'm the only one that's receiving that instruction. I'm probably going to shut down even more and go, this is not who I need to be working with. Like, why am I being pulled out to do this when these other three kids who are still in my same group being pulled out and they're not even doing the same skills I am? It just doesn't feel right. And so there is that social context by the time we get to that older age. So like, if we don't step in early enough on, it's going to just continue to create that space between and that deficit for that student. And it's not promoting anything at that point.
Well, and God forbid you should get into middle school and then it's all about that awareness piece.
Yes, so big at that point. Yes.
And so kids turn off.
Yes.
They don't want to learn anymore. They just have decided they're stupid. And
it is what it is. Yep. And that's not what we need to be doing. We need to be promoting our students to know that they have access to their available resources, to know that they have people on their side to get them to the skills that they need to be successful and to feel successful too.
Can you speak a little bit towards meeting kids where they are?
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the context of we've got, you know, English language learners that come in and they are in such an incredibly different place. So one size fits all really doesn't work, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest thing with meeting students where they are is to actually know where they are first. Like, I think half the battle is sometimes we don't even know where they are. And the only way you're going to get to know where a student is by getting to know your student and creating that community where you get to know your student in general as a human first, right? Like, I go back to, again, like my days as a teacher, we did home visits before school started and it was beautiful. And I remember leaving a house and I would sit in my car and I had my little documentation system. I had my little home visit buddy with me and I would sit down and I didn't write anything on this documentation system other than three things I learned about that child. And it was one thing they liked, right? So like, do they like sports? Do they have a dog? You know, things like that. You know, did they have family members? Were they the oldest? Were they the youngest? You know, what were they responsible of in their family? And then again, going back to that cultural piece, is there something I need to be aware of their background and their history of their family? Because it could be maybe they were being raised by a single parent, or if it was a bilingual family, or maybe someone's incarcerated right now, or, you know, just there was all those developmental stages of trying to figure out who is my child as a human, not as a student first. And then I will say that breaks down half the barrier, right? Like if I know a student's coming into my school and they're like, oh, they have a deficit in, you know, reading. Well, it might not be truly reading. It's that they are, like you said, maybe they're a second language learner and they just don't feel confident speaking in the language yet. Or, you know, just so it's like, it's just trying to find the little things that make you connect to the kid as a kid, not as a student first. I think that that's how I always kind of viewed it. I think the biggest thing is also being aware that what we have been exposed to, and I've only been in this career for 15 years, right? Like I would say I'm, you know, midway through my career path, whatever, but it's still early on. And thinking of how much I have experienced and been exposed to watching families come in and come out of our, you know, classrooms or our building, the things that we saw my first couple of years of teaching versus what I'm seeing now. And like you said, the things that are happening in the world that we're dealing with, right? Like there is so much more access to unfortunate things that we're seeing with, you know, the life that we live. I think that we need to be very aware that no matter what school you are, where you are in the community, no matter what race or color or demographic of socioeconomic status, problems are going to be everywhere. People are going to have hard trials, no matter whether they have money or they don't have money. We need to be open to understanding that there is no baseline expectation for someone to have a trauma background, right? Like, you can have all the money in the world and you still have maybe experienced trauma. And I think that that is sometimes where the conversations I've had with people is like, we really didn't know where this family came from. Do we get to know them very well? And, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, I didn't realize that, or I wasn't aware of that. Or, and again, it goes back to just getting to know the student as a student and getting to know the parent as a person that's in the student's life. And then seeing if there is something going on, we don't define that person by that deficit. So if there is an addiction issue that happened prior to this and a child was removed from that family, but the family is working on getting back on track and getting that student back in their family, that doesn't mean that the addiction is that family. That addiction is something the family has experienced. And we need to meet the family where they need us to come to. And so that might be, hey, do you want me to just call you once a week to check in with you and see how things are going? Do you need help with, you know, getting homework accomplished? Is there like a structure or routine that we need to work on to kind of get your home back in trial and track for things? You know, like, we're not here to judge. And I think that that's the biggest thing we have to put in our mindset is just because something has happened to you doesn't mean that's who you are.
That is so incredibly profound. It really is. And I would also mention, I think that our schools that handle populations that have more risk tend to get a bad rap. And if you have a kid who doesn't know where he's going to sleep tonight, he's not going to be that open to learning his fractions.
Right.
You know?